It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Yesterday, President Trump, after weeks of speculation, signed an executive order that aims to eventually shut down the Department of Education. As we've talked about, that would require an act of Congress, but it's one of many ways his administration has pushed ahead with actions that are, at best, legally questionable. Here to talk about that and more in our Friday political review is Linda Kenyon, Illinois Public Media's Washington correspondent. Linda, welcome back.
Thank you, Brian. Good to be here.
And listeners, we taped this conversation with Linda Thursday evening. And again, you just came from covering Trump signing this order in the East Room at the White House. What were some of the things he had to say about this?
Yes, I did just come from covering it. And I will say that it was a bit of a surreal experience. The president was in the East Room surrounded by school children of all different ages, sitting at school desks and cheering for the president as he announced the elimination of the Department of Education. Now, that doesn't mean they don't have to go to school. That just means that the education functions which were controlled at the federal level will now be returned to the states if all goes according to the president's plan. Now, core functions, for example, Pell Grants, student loans, Title I funding, coverage for students with disabilities, for example, will not be eliminated. Instead, the dismantling of the Department of Education means that those functions will be sent to other agencies to administer. This is something that President Trump had long promised. He said that he wanted to do it from the time he was president the first time, and he did campaign on it as well, saying that the education system in the United States is a failure, and that we spend most per student than any other country, and that we have the worst scores than any other country that spends this kind of money. And so this is something that he says should go and be handled at the local level.
Is there cost savings with this? You mentioned these functions are going to be moved to other areas of government. I know that, you know, there are still civil rights complaints happening. We heard about one in Illinois this very week, even as we talked with somebody who had been laid off from the Department of Education Civil Rights Division on Monday on this show. So if it's, is it about cost savings? Is it about this dream Republicans have had since the 80s? How do you see it?
Well, it might be more about the optics. It's hard to say how the actual savings will play out because the core functions are still very expensive, like administering student loans and Pell Grants, for example. So if that funding goes to other agencies or departments to administer, you're simply moving the money somewhere else, but that doesn't really eliminate that cost. So while there have to be some kind of a deep dive here as to the financial implications of all of this, it's hard to imagine at this point that eliminating the Department of Education, as the president calls it, is really going to eliminate pretty much, you know, the main amount of funding. I will point out that it does take an act of Congress to create a government agency, and it takes an act of Congress to eliminate a government agency. So the president cannot do this on his own. He can do some of it on his own by this executive order that he signed. But Congress does have to pass legislation. And Republicans have already been readying a bill, certainly in the House so far. Democrats have said they're not going to support it. And this should come as no surprise because they have long said that they're not going to support it. They said if education is failing, then you improve education. You don't eliminate a government agency that creates a lot of opportunity for students. And so this is probably going to boil down to another constitutional question regarding separation of powers and co-equal branches of government, in this case, executive and legislative.
Well, on that note, speaking of the third branch of government, there have been a lot of court rulings in recent weeks on the Trump administration's actions, from blocking the Elon Musk's Doge from firing USAID employees to stopping the ban on people who are transgender serving in the military. There seems to be a growing frustration among Republicans that these rulings aren't going their way. We've also heard that the Trump administration may have ignored a judge's ruling about an multiple aircraft carrying people to a prison camp in El Salvador. How are you seeing that from Washington this week?
Well, it looks like a lot of the actions that the president is taking are not playing out well for him in court. So far, federal courts have been ruling against him. And in the case that you mentioned regarding deportations to a prison camp in El Salvador, that involved Venezuelans that the president said were criminals that under the Alien Enemies Act that he invoked over the weekend, these folks were members of a Venezuelan gang. That's what he says. And he may be 100% correct regarding some of them, but we're already hearing that some of them were swept up and had nothing to do with gangs or anything like that. And so that is another court challenge. Now, the separation of powers again is an issue between, in this case, the Justice Department, the judiciary rather, and the executive, because a federal judge said no, the plane loads of Venezuelan deportees cannot leave American soil because they did not receive due process. And because there was some question as to whether all of the people on that plane were in fact members of this gang that the president cited. Well, the plane took off anyway. And the Trump administration's response was, well, it's too late. We're in international airspace and we're not turning the plane around. So basically, it's too bad. And the judge said, well, you know, rulings from the bench do not stop at the water's edge. So this has become a real problem. And so the president has lambasted the judge, calling him various names and such, as has been his practice when someone rules against him, and even called for this particular judge to be impeached. That's a pretty tall order. And that prompted the United States Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts to fire back. This is a very unusual thing for any chief justice to do. But Roberts said that the way to deal with disagreements is to go through the appellate process, not to call for impeachment of a judge who rules against you. And this is just plain wrong. So now we have a showdown between the courts and the executive branch.
We are living in interesting times. Linda Kenyon, Washington correspondent for Illinois Public Media. Thanks for being with us today on the 21st Show.
You are welcome.
More to come after a short break. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're going to continue our Friday Week in Review with Illinois politics. A number of Governor J.B. Pritzker's proposals from last month's State of the State speech were considered by members of the Illinois General Assembly this week. Some of them hit a brick wall, like his plan to make it easier for voters to consolidate the township layer of government. Same thing with his plan to allow community colleges to offer four-year degrees in high-demand fields like nursing. But some of his other ideas advanced, like a statewide ban on cell phone use in schools during class time. Amanda Vinicky has been following the action at the State House. She is a correspondent at WTTW's Chicago Tonight and host of that show's Week in Review. Amanda, always great to talk with you.
You know, it is one of my favorites to talk to you, Brian.
All right, so this is not an era, Amanda, in which we see a lot of broad bipartisan support for legislation, but this cell phone ban sailed through the Senate Education Committee, unanimous approval. What would this do?
This would essentially ban not just cell phones, but also tablets, smartwatches, gaming devices, whatever it is the kids are using these days, from using them during class time. At least is the floor. If this is a state law that really passes the buck essentially to local school districts and school boards to institute their own policies that, again, at a minimum say, none of these smart devices or cell phones while you're sitting at a desk or, I don't know, even in gym class, whenever it is class instruction, you can't be using them. It would be up to individual districts to determine how they want to handle it from there, whether, say, a teacher collects phones at the door, whether they're not even allowed on school premises, whether it's acceptable to use during recess or in the lunchroom or whatnot.
Those of us who grew up without phones in school, I don't know, it sounds a little ridiculous to me, but what are some of the concerns around this? The idea that keeping kids from having these devices.
Yeah, Brian, I frankly feel like I needed zero additional distractions, least of all a phone. As an adult, it is more than enough to try to handle all the emails and such that are constantly coming in, plus with the temptation of, Instagram or games or what have you. That, of course, is the reasoning behind this. The governor also cited cyberbullying as one of the problems that students have in the modern era, and this is a way to prevent that. The concerns, however, are things like, well, what if there is an emergency? Unfortunately, we are also living in an era where there are, school shootings. We're also at a time where students use their phones to contact their parents if they're not feeling well, pickup arrangements, whatever it may be. And so parents, some of them anyway, are uncomfortable with not having their students that accessible when they've gotten used to it. And I think also a cost concern. Some of these are pretty expensive devices, and the notion that, they might be required to leave them in a locker, it raises some eyebrows.
Here's my Solomonic solution. Just let them bring dumb phones to school.
No, there you go. Yeah. You can start a resurgence.
All right.
You and Kim Kardashian.
Or Chuck Schumer. One of Governor Pritzker's other proposals from the State of the State last month involves what are called pharmacy benefit managers. My eyes are already starting to glaze over, but maybe you can explain to me what exactly that means.
It rolls off the tongue, right? PBMs is shorthand, as these are known. And they are maybe not something that people really know about, and yet they impact probably all of us, whether you have private health insurance through your work or you're somebody who depends on government-backed Medicare or Medicaid. That is, it's really these middlemen is how they are described. Everybody that I talk to calls them that work with the drug wholesalers and manufacturers and then insurance companies to sort of tried essentially the goal is supposed to be saving money, that they are going to work and make deals. But the criticism is that instead of saving consumers money, they save some money, pocket it, keep a profit, and it instead leaves consumers paying more or cut off from prescriptions that these PBMs don't have a deal with the wholesaler and the insurance and the insurer, and that it is squeezing out local pharmacies, meanwhile, because they are having to sort of deal with this. And the thought is, and one of the problems is that we really don't have there's no transparency in this. We don't have to see the data and the deals that PBMs provide, but that the PBMs are steering customers to their own pharmacies, be it one of the big PBMs owns CVS, the drugstore, or whether it's an online pharmacist. And so those that are down the street are having to charge consumers more or having a harder time working with their customers. And then that cuts off that whole relationship. So really, again, the premise is that these are supposed to save money. PBMs say that is in fact what they do. And if you want to look for savings, you should go to Big Pharma. And then Big Pharma, the governor, and a lot of healthcare advocates say, not so fast. We believe that PBMs are really one of the prime drivers of the rising cost of prescription drugs.
Well, one of the other things that happened in the State House this week was a great many homeschooling parents went to the Capitol and got I guess, a pretty harsh lesson in what it's like to petition your government. This all stems from a news story last year about a relatively small number of abuses in the system, and, or I guess the lack of system, maybe, and some lawmakers are looking to impose some requirements on homeschoolers. Can you just briefly remind us what happened there?
Yeah, this is something that I guess those who follow Illinois politics have always known, that we are a state that has very lax regulation, or as you noted, lack of system for those who choose to homeschool. And that is something that that community really cherishes, that they, I don't think, just became acquainted necessarily with state house politics. Every year, there is a big lobby day where you see homeschool families bringing home-baked pies to lawmakers to sort of, I think, keep that friendly relationship going. As you noted, it has gotten significantly less friendly. The sponsor of the measure that is seeking to put some regulation, really just requiring that homeschool families register with the state so that there can be some way to track and be aware of when students are homeschooled versus attending a public, private, or charter school. And so that itself is getting a lot of pushback. Even more pushback from these homeschool families is part of the legislation that require they provide some sort of lesson plan and proof if there is a belief or allegation that a homeschool family isn't doing the schooling part of things, that instead they just have their child at home. So as you noted, Brian, the homeschoolers did not get their way despite bringing their pies in their faces, I guess you could say, in this particular occasion, because the AEA committee advanced the measure that would institute these regulations. I'm not sure whether this is going to be the final version that we will see, but certainly it is something that was brought to light by some great reporting with ProPublica and Capital News Illinois that showed what homeschoolers say are outlier cases of children staying at home and being abused or neglected.
Yeah, well, a lot of laws are based on the outliers. Amanda Vinicky is the host of The Week in Review on Chicago Tonight, where she's also a correspondent. Thanks for being with us.
It is my pleasure. Have a great Friday and weekend. Thanks.